Brothers and sisters, I proclaim to you this morning the word of our God as we could read it from John 21. And I ask your attention in particular for the words that are recorded for us in verse 7, the first part of that verse, that disciple whom Jesus loved, therefore said to Peter, "It's the Lord." That disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John, as we've heard previously, recognizes there's Jesus. We, for our part, would love to see this Jesus. We have our day-by-day struggles, frustrations. That's this life. There's an announcement this morning in relation to withdrawal from the church. That gives pain to us all, particularly to the family. And it presses the question, where's the Lord in this? A number of brothers are to be installed this morning in the office of elder and deacon in this church. There'll be much for the brothers to do in the weeks and the months, the years ahead. And somehow, an announcement as we've just had impacts the shape of the work the brothers see ahead of them. And you get the same question. Where is the Lord? Will he give the strength needed? Can we count on him? We look outside. We follow the news. It's so terribly wet. There's those amongst us itching to get onto the land. We see in the news of flooding. Some local, some further east. Where is the Lord in all of that? We'd love to see the Lord. Have him with us as do the tasks we're given to do. Well, brothers, sisters, the Lord would assure us this morning again of his continuous presence, and more than presence, his continuous control. In his time, he gives clear evidence. And so I summarize the sermon this morning with this theme: the risen Christ encourages his disciples with evidence of his presence. I ask your attention for 3 points. The first is, why was this evidence needed? Then, how was this evidence convincing? And in third place, so what? What do we do with this? First then, why was this evidence needed? Our text has John talking to Peter. We've met these two men before. Chapter 20, Easter Sunday. Oh yes, in chapters before as well. But it was the two, Peter and John, who dashed off to Jesus' tomb and found that Jesus was gone, risen from the dead. Jesus appeared to the two, together with numerous other disciples, later that day. Again, John 20 records that. They're in the room, and suddenly Jesus is there also. He appears a week later, when Thomas is present, and Thomas doubts Jesus can't have risen. Well, these disciples are convinced now Jesus has in fact risen from the dead. So what do? As per Jesus' instruction, they go to Galilee. Regular life continues. Peter's a married man. He has a trade. He has to eat. So there comes a moment when he, and there are six other disciples with him, he says, I'm going fishing. To which the six reply, we're going with you. Very well, they're on the boat. Peter, a career fisherman. The two sons of Zebedee, James and John, they're there too. Also career fishermen. The other four, we don't know what their trade was, but hey, with three career fishermen, professionals, you'd expect that they would score. My point in saying this, these men in the boat are doing their normal, predictable, daily thing. And they're expert at it. Even so, though they spend the nights out in the water, they catch nothing. Now, you can imagine how this happens. They push off from the shore. They go to a favored place. These are professionals. They know where to look for fish. They cast the net, throw it overboard, sit down to chat, and after some time, pull in the net, nothing. Cast it again, they sit down and they chat. Pull in the net again, nothing. Cast it again, still nothing. Let's head around to over there. Let's try over there. These men know what they're doing. And again, nothing. Did they pray? There's no reason to think they didn't. Ask God for His blessing on their work. But the best efforts produce nothing despite their prayer, despite their dependence on the Lord. And perhaps you can understand, too, that as they talk and come to grips with there's nothing, that they would revisit in their minds and in their conversation that earlier time that they were on the lake. It's Luke chapter 5. And they caught nothing. And Jesus came to them. And then they caught a lot of fish. So many, there's two boats that time. The two boats are about to sink because of the load of fish. And then you can imagine that the conversation goes back to Jesus. Wouldn't it be great if He were here? Then there'd be a harvest. Our labor wouldn't be in vain. But as it is, He's not here. The conversation. Remember, brothers, Jesus said He was going to go away. He said we couldn't follow Him. On the morning of His resurrection, He told Mary, I'm going to ascend to heaven. Is Jesus gone? Are we on our own? And that's the sentiment we relate to. When things go well, we feel we can cruise on our own. We know it isn't so. But it's particularly when we get frustrated, there aren't the fruits we want, that the question certainly arises, where's Jesus? Why doesn't He come to help us? How come we're on our own? And it's discouraging. Some of us, impatient to get on the land. It's much too wet. We don't see ourselves on the land for who knows how long yet. What's that mean for income, for harvest? There's others of us. We have our jobs. Thankful for that. But we're aware health issues can change our ability to do our work. And then, where does the income come from? Again, we feel frustrated when loved ones harden themselves, leave. It's true for family. It's true for office staff. It's true for us all. Where is the Lord? Why does this happen? Brothers, a number of you have served as elder and continue to serve. A number of you are being ordained as elders this morning. Suppose you were parachuted onto the disciples' boat. What would you say to them? How would you encourage? You have to step into some homes in the congregation in the coming weeks and months. And the situation is perhaps parallel. What are you going to say, deacons? What are you going to say? It's a question not just for the office bearers. We're one body together. What do we say to each other when we labor and we labor and we labor, and the result is nothing? You see, there's our first point. Why was evidence of Jesus' presence needed? Yes, we all need somehow the reassurance the Lord is with us. Well then, our second point. How was the evidence Jesus gave convincing? The disciples keep on fishing. Cast the net, pull it in, nothing. Cast it, pull it in, nothing. Dawn arises. And now they see on the shore a man standing. And he shouts across the water to catch anything. Our translation refers to him saying, "Children, have you caught anything?" We're not to think that's condescending in any way. It's a sort of comment that any fisherman says to the boys in the boat, "Lads, did you catch anything?" Same thing. Their answer is no. One word. We get that. It's frustrating. Why was the man on the shore not known to the men in the boat? It wasn't that far away, 100 meters. Wasn't there enough light yet? Didn't they recognize the voice? Were they so frustrated? Had the Lord closed their eyes, their ears? We're probably best off not to speculate. We can relate when we're discouraged, as things don't go as we want, we're frustrated, we tend to see the dark side of things and not see the bright. Yeah, that's reality. The stranger on the shore says to the 7 in the boat, "Cast it on the other side, and you will find." We've got fishermen in our midst. Sports fishermen. How would you respond? You see, the problem is not the stranger's suggestion to cast the nets on the other side, because, you know what, anybody can say that. And it does get said. Just keep at it. Try over there. Yeah. The smart guy on the shore has got all sorts of wisdom, and he'll share with the boys in the boat. That's how it happens. The problem we have is that the stranger on the shore utters a promise, and you will find. How can he on the shore pledge that you're going to find a catch on the other side of the boat? Look, from the shore, he can't see what's happening under the water, 100 meters away. On top of that, in the boat are career fishermen, experts in the trade. Can't they spot the fish there? And we're inclined to say, if we were in that boat, we'd have a wisecrack for the man on the shore. And perhaps there was on the part of the disciples. I don't know. But the thing is, they do keep on trying, and they do cast the net on that side of the boat, and the net's full. Too full to haul in. And that congregation, that does it for John. That the stranger on the shore could know what the experts in the boat, and John's one of them, fisherman of a trade, that the stranger on the shore knows what the experts in the boat don't know, sees what the experts in the boat don't see, that does it for John. It's the Lord, he says to Peter. Striking. Why does John say it is the Lord? Why doesn't he say, that's Jesus? What's the difference? The Lord. That's the master. The owner. That's what the word Lord means. The king. The sovereign one. But it means more than that. The Lord, that's also the New Testament's term for the Old Testament name Yahweh, translated repeatedly in the Old Testament with the word Lord in uppercase letters. When John says to Peter, it's the Lord, he's saying both possible understandings of the word. This is Yahweh. This is God. And hadn't that been John's theme throughout his gospel? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things are made through him. Without him was anything made that was made. And that Word, God, became flesh. This is the Lord. This is God in the flesh. We spent all these years with him in our midst. We thought he was gone. Yes, he died. We saw him risen. Where was he this night? Well, there he is. God with us. This is the Lord. When, congregation, did the Lord arrive on the shore? Had he just come? Had he been there? You could say he had been there, but the disciples didn't see him because it was dark. Now day is dawning, and they can see the vague outlines of a man standing there. Yes. Did you notice there's a charcoal fire? What's that tell you? The stranger been there for a while. There could be more locals walking the lake along the shore. That's possible. This is one of them. But the point is, congregation, did Jesus just arrive? No. There's no reason to think that. Now they recognize the Lord. That doesn't mean the Lord wasn't there at midnight, at 2 a.m, at 4. But now they recognize. Instantly, Peter wraps up his cloak around him and is into the water to go to the Lord. The other 6 paddle that boat to the Lord. They want to be where Jesus is. And we would do the same. But Jesus had been with them all night long. Why did they not catch any fish? Because Jesus was absent? No, because Jesus was present. And leading things in such a way, setting up the situation such that he could teach them a lesson. Why the abundant fish? Because Jesus wasn't there? Because Jesus was there? Yes, he was there. Why didn't the net break? Because Jesus was there. You surprised? Shortly we'll sing Psalms 139. And what's the point of that psalm? Where shall I go from your spirit? Asks David. Where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make a bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, your right hand shall hold me. And if I say, surely darkness shall cover me, and the light above me be darkness, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. Ah, yes. We can't see God in the dark. But God can see us in the dark. And we cannot see God perhaps in the light, but God can see us in the light. Is he away? Is he gone? You see, there's the point. He would reassure the disciples. I am with you always. It's what I told you. They get to Jesus. It's a charcoal fire. And on the fire's fish and bread. Yes, Jesus says to the disciples, fetch some fish. And Peter goes and he fetches some fish. Brings the net on shore and he empties the net. 153 of them. He does his counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. How long does that take? Every disciple should get his fair cut of the catch. But what is not in the text, congregation, what is not in the text is that Peter added fish to the fire. The point is that Jesus is supplying breakfast. The disciples are out all night. And they have to catch because that's breakfast. It's their income. Is it? The Lord supplies. And isn't that his promise? Didn't he teach the disciples to pray the 4th petition? Give us this day our daily bread. And isn't the promise of the Lord, ask and it will be given to you? You ask for daily bread, I give you your daily bread. And he did. Did he give when the disciples wanted it? Well, no. They wanted to catch at 11 o'clock at night, and they didn't. They wanted to catch at 2 a.m, and they didn't. They wanted to catch at 4 a.m, and they didn't. But the Lord gave them what they needed, enough for the day. It's on the charcoal fire. And so much more than they needed. 153 fish. Where's the Lord? For the disciples, the question becomes so obvious. They don't even dare to ask anymore in verse 12, "Who are you?" They know very well. This is Jesus. This is Jesus here. The evidence is in their face. He's given them their daily bread. And more. Now our third point. So what? What are the disciples going to do with this? What are we going to do with this? Jesus has revealed himself. It's how the passage begins, verse 1. It's how it ends, verse 14. Jesus reveals himself in this manner, in this context. When the questions are there, where is he? When we're trying so hard to earn our daily crust, there's no results. When we're doing our daily work, our task as office bearers, our task as parents, and things don't work out the way we want. And Jesus reveals himself. How? Not by jumping up and down and saying, "Yeah, here I am." But in the normal activities of life. Providing fruit on labor, where even expertise doesn't give the fruit you need. Why does John tell this to his readers? His readers were normal people. Well, they knew about Jesus. But they're doing their daily work. And they get the same frustrations you and I have in daily work. They do their best. But does it bring about the results we want? We know it. We can't control the rain. We can't cause a crop to grow. We can't control the economy. We can't determine the market factors. We can't even control our own health and our ability to work. It's true for office bearers. You can labor in the congregation. You can sow the seed. You can water. But you can't cause growth. You can't guarantee a harvest. It's beyond us. Same when it comes to parenting. We do our best, but we can't bring about the results we want. It can be frustrating. And the Lord says, you are dependent on the God of heaven and earth. So, we begin this worship service with that confession. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the Creator of heaven and earth. Yes. That's not just words, beloved. That's reality. He's promised to supply our daily needs, daily bread. That's why he tells us to pray. And he does supply. His amount, his time, his way. We prefer it at our time. We set the amount. We set the manner the Lord ought to supply. Yes, that's our preference. And when it doesn't come the way we want, we say, where's the Lord? And the Lord says, I'm with you. That's a promise. And I supply what you need at my time, in my manner, at the amount I determine. And is that enough for you, brothers, sisters? Look, if this Jesus the Lord has left, the glory of heaven, has gone to the cross in order to atone for your sin and reconcile you to the Father, if he's laid down his life for you, that's how precious you are to him, how shall he with him not freely give us all things? Will he fail you? Will he desert you? No! This God so loved the world, he gave his only Son for you. And so he'll give you your daily bread too. In perfect measure. In perfect timing. That's something we may believe, cling to. This is our God. Could John, could Peter, could the other disciples work with this revelation of John 21 in the years ahead? It wasn't all that many years later. Months later, when Peter is in prison because he's preaching the gospel, did the Lord supply for him? It's many years later, John's on the island of Patmos because of the gospel. Did the Lord supply for him? And I can tell you so much about the early Christians. Did the Lord supply? Well, yes. Most definitely, read through the book of Acts, read through the accounts of the Apostle Paul in his letters. My God, he's so confident from his prison cell. My God, he tells the Philippians, will supply all your needs according to his abundance of mercy. Who is your God, brothers? He gives you a task to do. Does he fail? Will he supply? Yes. Do you need to see Jesus to be confident he'll supply? No, you don't. But he will show you fruit on your labor at his time. Evidence he's with you. Exact shape of fruit you want or quantity of fruit you want? No, that doesn't matter. But he will not fail. And that's true for you, brothers, elders, deacons, and it's equally true for all of us, congregation, in our varying circumstances. This God doesn't fail. He's with us. And that's so encouraging. The little things he gives. He gives. Treasure the little things. Evidence he's with us. And the big things the same. But he's with us. It's the promise. Amen. We sing 139, the stanzas 4, 5, and 6.